Good morning, everyone. We begin in Washington, Afghanistan, and Pakistan all at once this morning. Afghan President Hamid Karzai and Pakistani President Asif Ali Zardari are set to visit Washington later this week. And is it at all possible that the notion of Taliban nukes is going to be on the table when those leaders sit down with the president and with administration officials? As Taliban forces make on-the-ground encroachments inside Pakistan in Bunir province, tantalizingly near Islamabad, south of Islamabad, according to the New York Times, the Pakistani nuclear arsenal is located. Is that an actual issue for the United States government, which has to decide how many millions of dollars they're going to be delivering to Pakistan as an emergency security arrangement? Joining us now to set all of this in context, especially the Afghanistan elections and administration support for Hamid Karzai, is Christine Fair, senior political scientist for the RAND Corporation. She joins us from Virginia this morning. Christine, thanks for coming back to the program.
Well, thank you for having me.
You know, David Sanger on the front page of the New York Times has this story about U.S. officials concerned with Taliban successes on the battlefield in Pakistan, suggesting that there may be some threat to the nuclear arsenal in Pakistan. Is that something that is likely to come up explicitly in talks with Zardari and Barack Obama later this week?
Well, you know, and obviously I have no insight in what the talking points are for that meeting. I think there is a fairly widespread consensus that the arsenal is actually safe when they're in their depot. I don't know too many people that believe that the Taliban are going to stage an assault on the facilities and abscond with a weapon, especially since the weapons are actually not stored in an assembled state. The cores are apart from the warhead. The warheads unassembled are obviously apart from the missiles. One of the issues that does concern me, and it's been concerning a few of my colleagues, is that Pakistan is a means of providing security for their small but nonetheless fastest-growing arsenal. It tends to move them around, and that is to ensure a first or survivable strike capability. And my concern is not when they're in the depot, but actually when they leave the depot, because many of the places that they're moving around in are, you know, quite vulnerable. And we've seen Pakistan convoys being attacked by militants in many other contexts. And, you know, I like to remind my Pakistani colleagues who try to assure me that there's no problem that a year or so ago, the United States lost several nuclear weapons as they were flying over in aircraft above the United States. And, you know, we've spent several decades and billions of dollars trying to ensure that that would never happen, yet in fact it did.
Well, that's a really good point. So outside of the nuclear issue, it seems as though the White House has put out some sort of feeler or has offered some sort of contact with Nawaz Sharif, the popular opposition leader who stands in marked contrast to President Zardari, who, while he is in power, is widely viewed as very, very unpopular and ineffectual. How's that going to work?
Well, you know, the problem with the U.S. engagement strategy is it really is stovepiped, and it tends to center around one personality. So during the Musharraf years, it was all Musharraf all the time. Now it's publicly Zardari, but privately Kayani. And because
Can you describe who Kayani is?
Oh, yes. I'm so sorry. Yeah, he's the current chief of Army staff. He was Musharraf's successor in that capacity of Army chief. So actually, given that Zardari is nearly universally loathed, his approval rating is in the single digits. Nawaz Sharif, in contrast, has a much higher approval rating. It seems as if there were an election today, and if he were allowed to contest that election, because, of course, he's not allowed to at this point because of the Supreme Court ruling. So the United States is actually being pretty smart in trying to reach out to the leadership that has, in fact, the majority of support. And, you know, if Nawaz Sharif were to come out even more strongly than he has against the Taliban, that would actually be very helpful in trying to get Pakistanis to understand the threat that quite frankly, really does potentially undermine the security of their state.
Is an emergency aid package something that's going to actually work here to satisfy U.S. concerns about the confrontation with the Taliban, or does that money simply go into various programs that meet the needs and the agenda of Pakistani officials, be they military or civilian?
Well, I'm of really mixed minds. One does have to ask the question as to why Pakistan, despite being the beneficiary of relatively significant largesse for six decades, still has problems. Now, one philosophy in the aid community, and I believe there's a book about this, Why Aid Kills in Africa, is that when you have so much external support, it actually forces, it allows the government to never come to terms with priorities. It doesn't have to forge a relationship between the government and the governed by extracting resources and redelivering, and it doesn't have to make tough decisions about its excessively funded conventional military forces to fight India and its poorly configured capabilities to fight insurgency within its country, as well as to provide education, health, and health care. So one philosophy says that aid actually hurts because it allows the state to continue pressing on with irresponsible priorities with complete lack of responsiveness to the people. And so I actually do buy that in considerable measure. That being said, the second problem with aid to Pakistan has been the modalities of it. We have a very small footprint in the country because of the security issues. And for given the importance of the country, our mission in Pakistan is actually quite small. And so the preference is always going to be for cash assistance in the form of budgetary support. And when you give budgetary support, that is when, how shall I put it, funds become highly fungible. And the U.S. on a number of programs, I've had officials tell me, we don't know where the money went. We know we transferred it to the ministry, but then the money disappeared.
And that's been going on really since the 80s when Pakistan was the setting for the Mujahideen fighting in Afghanistan.
Exactly. It's a long-standing pattern.
Very quickly, Nawaz Sharif's popularity comes from his closer ties to the Islamists in Pakistan. Isn't that a problem if the U.S. is going to open a channel to him?
Well, that's actually not where his popularity comes from. That's a big misperception about Nawaz Sharif. He did flirt with this thing called Sharia in his second term. That wasn't about turning Pakistan into a Talibanized state. It was really about protecting him from the army. He knew the army was coming after him. He had played generals off of each other. He had fired two chiefs of army staff. The third didn't put up with it. That was obviously President Musharraf who took over in 1999. And he, trying to institute Sharia, had hoped to curry favor with the Saudis that would also put pressure on the army to protect him. And so much of his good track record, cooperating with the U.S. on counterterrorism, counter-narcotics, he actually had a very good record. And he's actually very grateful to the United States because the United States, quite frankly, saved his life because
right.
Musharraf may have killed him.
Indeed.
So his popularity comes from the fact that he has stayed to constitutional principles, and he's been the antithesis of Zardari. That's where his popularity comes from.
And Christine, how much are these countries collaborating anyway to really deal with the Taliban? Are they equipped to really be a united force, even if they get money?
Well, the problem is the Pakistan Army has said repeatedly it does not want to be a counterinsurgency force, which is needed to repel the Pakistan Taliban. The police, which is predominantly the victim of Taliban strikes and related organizations like the Frontier Constabulary, which is, a very poorly trained outfit but are supposed to function as police, they are so poorly equipped, they are poorly trained, they are poorly manned, and they are basically sitting ducks to be picked off by the insurgents. The United States has really lost an opportunity in the last 8 years by vesting all of its resources in the Pakistan Army and really paying scant regard to the nation's police forces. Yet the counterinsurgency literature is very clear that police win insurgencies, not armies.
Christine, we have about a minute and a half here, and we can't avoid talking about Afghanistan. How do you think Barack Obama is going to phrase the term President Karzai? Gosh, I'm so sorry I snubbed you for those 8 weeks. Welcome back into the fold when he meets with the Afghan president, who he really hasn't gone out of his way to cultivate, it seems to me, in the early going here.
Well, look, the international community is really between a rock and a hard place. Karzai has been universally disappointing. He has not moved on corruption. He has protected drug lords, and there's all sorts of suspicions, probably more justifiable than not, about his brother in Kandahar being involved in drug trade. He spent more time tirading against the international security forces killing Afghan civilians than the Taliban, who do the same. But we're kind of in a predicament because of the decision to delay the elections to August, and the lapse of Karzai's term, which is looming, there is not a constitutional president between now and August. This is also the key fighting time. So the U.S., even though, you know, it wants to support a process to get a president, in point of fact, it's basically had to say
right.
we support government continuity.
So it's a President Obama meeting candidate Karzai at this point in the process in Afghanistan. We got to go. It's Christine Fair.
He's not a candidate. He remains the president.
Right.
That's pretty clear.
But it'll lapse between now and the election. Christine Fair, senior political scientist for the RAND Corporation on Afghanistan and Pakistan. Meetings this week in Washington.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.